Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. A new school year is upon us, but many schools across Pennsylvania are facing some of the same challenges that they've dealt with for years, and maybe even a few new ones. On today's program, we'll address several of those challenges in a sort of a state of the state of education in Pennsylvania. Joining us on today's program, John Callahan is Chief Advocacy Officer for the Pennsylvania School Boards Association. John, welcome back to the program.
Glad to be here.
Also joining us, Dr. Frederick Witham, Superintendent at the Cumberland Valley School District. Dr. Witham, thanks for being with us today.
Good morning.
And joining us is Ronald Cowell, who is Executive Director of the Education Policy and Leadership Center. Mr. Cowell, welcome to the program.
Hello, good to be with you.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. And I want to mention that we did invite the Pennsylvania State Education Association, the state's largest teachers union, and the Pennsylvania Association of Rural and Small Schools, but both declined to join us today. As I said, the beginning of the school year, lots of excitement. You know, I ask for emails and questions from listeners, parents, maybe even students, and the one that I did receive was about a student who couldn't get their locker open, so I figured that was not an issue. Maybe that's a challenge every year, but one that we won't deal with on a statewide basis, so we'll stop with the lockers that won't open right now. So, let's start with the biggest challenges facing schools this school year. John Callahan from the School Boards Association, biggest challenges.
Well, I'd like to say with 1.72 million kids coming to school this week and next week, there's going to be a locker problem.
That locker somewhere. Problem is huge. It's been underreported.
But I think, you know, when we're talking about schools, one of the biggest things that we've been reported to us constantly every year we go out on a survey is 83% of supers and school leaders always say budget problems are the toughest thing. And I know I might bore some people when I talk numbers, but when we talk about pensions being a huge cost on school districts, that's always the sucking sound on school budgets. So you're being pushed on that side of the mandated cost that's ever increasing and sucking away your budget. And then on the other side, when you're having the revenue side, you kind of have restrictions on that way of how much you can get from the local revenue. And then at the same time from the state, well, the state's giving us increases of $100+ million.
Over the last 4 years,
we have a pension bill at the same time that's always about 30% to 40% higher than that. So all that money's going to pensions. So there is budget pressures, and every school district every year goes through their budget and says, "What do we need to do?" Whether it's we have to restrain class sizes or we have to do X, Y, Z. That's always the hot topic that throughout an entire school year. School districts are facing, and so many. I probably could go through all the little issues that could go with that, but
we will.
That's the biggest one.
We maybe won't get to all of them, but we will get to some of them. Dr. Witham, Cumberland Valley is looked upon as, well, you are one of the biggest school districts in central Pennsylvania, maybe even the state. Looked at as a district that is fairly well-to-do, that has more resources than a lot of school districts across the state. Budget, still an issue?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think it's all, it's got to be taken in perspective. We have gained, just in the past 5 years alone, over 1,000 students. We're going to open up on Monday pushing 9,400 kids. And that is all in proportion with the money that we have to spend per child. We actually have one of the lower per pupil cost expenditures in the state because we have tried to really become efficient in what we do to deliver a good quality education. The interesting thing about financial pressures at CV, it's not only the things that John mentioned, but while 65% of the school districts are shrinking across the Commonwealth, we're growing. So the funding formula and the monies that we're receiving from the state are not proportional to the rate at which we're growing. As a matter of fact, some of the school districts that are shrinking are financially doing better over the years because they're getting close to or slightly above what they had received with fewer students.
And there is actually a term for that, hold harmless, in which under law, the no school district gets less than they had before, even if enrollment is shrinking. 65% of the school districts in the state have smaller enrollments. What's going on there?
It's just the change in population in Pennsylvania. I mean, even you look at small, you talk to the Boroughs Association or the county guys, you'll see a big fluctuation in districts. But typically in Pennsylvania, I mean, Cumberland Valley is one of the outliers of growing. A lot of our population is leaving Pennsylvania. So that's just an outcome of what's happening. It's just what it is.
Silver Spring Township is one of the fastest growing townships in the Commonwealth, and they are one of the four municipalities that the district serves.
Mm-hmm. Ron Cow, your organization, the Education Policy and Leadership Center, that you deal a lot with how the state works with education. You're a former state legislator yourself. So when you hear about just what our two other guests said, and you're well aware of this, of funding from the state, budget pressures overall. What are your thoughts?
Well, to go to the question you asked of John, what are the big issues? And this relates to money. I think there are probably three or four big issues that school districts and educators are dealing with and policymakers are sensitive to or need to be sensitive to all over the state. One is, what do we do to promote student achievement? Secondly, what do we do to assure safety in our schools for students and the teachers and staff who work there? And thirdly, what do we do with some of the worst in the country equity gaps in terms of opportunity and resources among our 500 school districts? And that relates very much to the worst in the country state system of funding schools. Our state does spend a lot of money on public education when you look at a raw number. The fact is we rank in the bottom five in terms of the share of K-12 costs paid for with state dollars. And so we've got a system that is excessively dependent on local wealth. That usually means property taxes. And as a result, we've got a getting worse gap between the have and the have-not districts. And this whole issue about hold harmless and declining enrollments in some districts is very pertinent. But that should not mask in any way the fact that the overall problem is Pennsylvania lawmakers are cheap about supporting public education here in the Commonwealth. Whether you rank or whether you try to calculate the percent of K-12 costs, where we rank in the bottom five, or the dollars appropriated per student, where we trail all of our contiguous states except Ohio, we're almost $1,000 per student per year behind Maryland and even West Virginia. And this results, again, as I suggested, in an excessive dependency on local wealth. Kids have their education opportunity in large measure, often dependent on what side of the street do they live in, which district do they live in, the have district or the have not district. That's grossly unfair, and it's now being litigated. And fortunately, our state Supreme Court recently has said to the lower courts and lawmakers that this indeed is an important issue. And for the first time in generations, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court is now saying this is the business of the court. And so if the legislature fails to act, we may see some court relief over the next couple of years.
Kind of like what I'm thinking of when you say that is kind of like redistricting as the court took on that. Just to provide some context of what you're discussing, the state provides, or last year, did provide 36.9% of funding to local school districts. That is 46th in the nation as far as the state level of funding, even though, as John Callahan has mentioned, since Governor Wolf took office, there's been at least $400 million more in funding. There is, now, Ron, you described it as worst in the nation funding mechanism. There is a new funding formula based on enrollment, students living in poverty, and English language learners. But it isn't retroactive. Out of a $6 billion basic education funding, only $450 million has been sent to school districts under this formula. So it will be years before some of those poorer districts get the funding they need. And I think what a lot of people have to think about is we're not just talking about numbers and school districts, naming those school districts. We're talking about students and their education. So how do you put a value on it? And will there be any change unless it is ordered by a court? Ron Cowell, I'll have you answer that question.
Let me make a couple comments about it. You correctly state that the legislature very deliberately said that this new formula that most folks think is a pretty good formula, it's got a lot of support out of the education and advocacy community, so the formula itself is pretty good, and the legislature pats itself on the back for embracing this, and rightfully so. However, it's limited, its application is limited to only the new money. And the new money, the last couple of years, has amounted to only $100 million a year. So to quickly review the numbers, we've got about $5.5 billion being distributed through the old formula. And basically, it's a hold harmless now. Whatever you got out of that from that old formula, you keep on getting it. The new formula applies to about $500 million. At the rate of increasing that basic education funding line item by $100 million a year, my 10-year-old granddaughter is going to be more than 60 years old before we get to the point where even half of the money is going out through the new formula.
I'll be dead.
And that's ridiculous. So the key to the effectiveness of this new formula is a significant increase in the amount of money that gets distributed through the new formula. Now, the other thing I would add, though, is that the legislature and most folks don't want to take money away from any districts as well. So you're not going to be talking about redistributing the $5.5 billion. You need to be talking very seriously about significant increases on an annualized basis of what is now that very limited pot of $500 million going out through the new formula.
John Callahan, all right, hold harmless. What is, why are you smiling so much about it?
Well,
I know it's a question you're probably...
It's a technical question, so I mean...
Okay, well, we'll try not to get too technical about it, but bottom line is that as Ron Cowell described, districts are going to get the same amount, not less than the same amount they get now, even though 65% may be losing enrollment. Now, just to put that more into context, just because those 65% are losing enrollment does not mean that they haven't gotten the formula, or excuse me, the funding that they needed in the past. So that doesn't mean automatically they lose something. But what is PSBA's take on hold harmless, and is this something that needs to be considered almost on a yearly basis?
So let me kind of go back to even before we did this new formula, we all knew that the system itself was very inequitable to begin with and had a huge significant equity gap between school districts that were funded. So you'd had school districts that truly needed more dollars, weren't able to get it because of the old way we were funding things. And when you put the kind of the new formula in place, it only applied to new dollars. So you never really fixed the base problem.
Right.
The new formula, the more money you put in, it slowly does the act of fixing it. But of course, that's 20 years. So the more money that you put in it, the faster that will be fixed is one of the solutions here. Now, is that going to happen in Pennsylvania? God only knows. We're going to have more discussions about that. So,
politically,
no. Pretty darn hard. You know,
right.
We're asking for more dollars. And on the local end, like I said, you know, if you want to raise those dollars on the local end, each district's different. Some school districts have a great property tax base, and they can raise taxes very minimally and get a lot of dollars from that and be able to supplement. And that's another reason why we also have that equity gap, because some districts, when they raise taxes, hardly get anything out of it because they may not have the property tax base that's there as well. So lots of reasons why we have the equity gap. How do we fix it? You know, we've got to find a greater investment in education to kind of fix this problem. I mean, that's this plain and simple solution. It's not simple, I should say, but it's something we have to do for students.
We're going to talk about property taxes in just a moment, school safety, a lot of other issues as well. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. At the beginning of the school year here in 2018-2019, we're talking about the, I guess you could call it kind of a state of education in Pennsylvania. There's no way we'll get to all the challenges that schools are facing across this state, but we're going to touch on some of the big ones as well. Our guest today, Ron Cowell, Executive Director of the Education Policy and Leadership Center, Dr. Frederick Witham, Superintendent with the Cumberland Valley School District, and John Callahan, Chief Advocacy Officer for the Pennsylvania School Boards Association. We invited PSEA, Teachers Union, and the Pennsylvania Association of Rural and Small Schools, but they declined our invitation. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. All right, property taxes was mentioned. As Ron Cowell said, that it's, you know, up to the local districts. If you subtract the 37% level of state funding, some federal funding that goes into it, for the most part, the majority of funding for local school districts in this state relies on the local taxpayers, on property taxes. Dr. Witham, I won't say that you're in an ideal position, but you're in a much more enviable position than a lot of school districts, in that you do have a school district, an area that is growing with people moving in, room to grow. But there are many school districts in the state where people are leaving. Some of the urban districts, there isn't even room to grow. There's not a lot of taxable property there. Your thoughts on property taxes and whether that is the way to continue to fund local school districts in this state?
Well, you know, nobody likes property taxes.
No,
there's no doubt about that. They are, though, as a funding mechanism, one of the most stable ways to ensure that over time you can have some kind of level of funding and consistency in the educational programs that are being delivered in a school district that are being mandated by the Commonwealth and the federal government to ensure that you're meeting just the minimum, you know, in and of itself. You know, a lot of the things often that we hear is that, you know, I don't have kids in school anymore, and my property taxes are really a drain on a fixed income. We don't collect enough property taxes to cover our expenses over the 13 years that a child is in school in a district, and it is a, you know, dollar for dollar, a good investment in your child, and there is a social contract with the community, an understood social contract that, you know, we want our children to do well and be educated and do better than the next generation. But there certainly are funding models out there where if you are in your home for, you know, 30 years or 40 years and you have paid your property taxes in, certainly we could begin to look at opportunities to freeze property taxes at a certain level for a long time. Senior citizens have contributed to their school district. It doesn't have to necessarily be in all or none. That's just one example of other things that are out there on the table.
Well, let me bring up another one for John here, and that is the elimination of property taxes altogether. There has been a move afoot here in recent years in the legislature to do just that and replace the revenue that would have to be generated from a combination of increased sales taxes or personal income taxes. You know, this argument has been going on for a long, long time.
But we're not going to solve it right now.
No, we're not.
But I'll try.
Go ahead. Your thoughts on it.
The thoughts are we have to make the math, the calculus of this work. We understand that nobody likes property taxes. It is very stable. So then what are you going to do?
I got to interrupt for a second. If I'm a property owner and I pay taxes for years, I'm glad to hear that I'm stable anyway.
You're stable. That's good. And I think it's a matter of trying. You know, if you're going to do that, you have to shift to another tax, which is, you know, you got personal income tax out there, sales tax, and both of them are kind of a little bit, you know, PIT might be regressive, people say.
Income tax.
income tax, and then sales tax also could be regressive depending on what you spread it to. You know, let's say you want to tax clothing and bring in that revenue. What does that look like? And then there's the other side, which is who do you want to affect? And now you have a constitutional amendment that just passed that would allow you just to do homesteads, properties, and kind of focus on them instead of your corporate properties. I could call them that. So there's different options in how you put this puzzle together. But in the end, the math has to work in order to actually effectuate the change. And the problem is, I think the biggest problem with this is many people assume that school districts and their costs grow by a fixed, you know, percentage, you know, 2%. When we have mandates like special education, like the pension system, healthcare and other things that are going up by 20% cost range a year, it doesn't match up. So you have to factor that into the formula. If all those pieces came together in a magical way, it could work. We just haven't found it.
I'm curious. Michigan, the state of Michigan, and I want to say this was 15 years ago, they scrapped their property taxes like overnight. And if I remember correctly, without anything to replace them with, at the time, people were like, what are they going to do? Whatever happened in Michigan?
I don't know. I'll have to look into it.
All right. I'm curious. So, Ron Kemp.
There goes Ron.
Interrupt. You know, what happened in Michigan is that they deliberately created a crisis.
Right.
So, you know, that was intentional. For a while, they replaced those dollars with some state money. But if you look carefully at Michigan now, they've got property taxes for school purposes in Michigan. And so eliminating them was not an effective or long-term solution. Let me add, though, in terms of the proposals in Pennsylvania, I think, along with a lot of other education advocates, that the complete elimination of school property taxes or property taxes for school purposes would be a bad idea for several reasons. One, lawmakers in Harrisburg and around the state who are proposing that as a solution ignore the fact that they are the problem with the property taxes. You know, we are excessively dependent on property taxes because the state is cheap about its support for K-12 education. So we ought not to ignore that underlying cause while they propose putting Band-Aids on the system. But secondly, the math is bad. The proposals that have been made in Harrisburg to eliminate school property taxes and replace them with state money don't add up. The math is bad in that the replacement taxes are less than the property tax revenue that would be denied school districts. So school districts would be left with fewer resources. Additionally, you know, the state has not been a good partner. It was only a couple of years ago that the school appropriation or the education appropriation got done in April. And about that time, I asked one of the legislative leaders, what would school districts do this year if they were totally dependent on state money? Would schools not open until April rather than in September? So for a lot of reasons, there ought to continue to be some use of property taxes to support schools. The problem in Pennsylvania is the excessive dependency on the property taxes and the unpredictability and the unfairness of the state share.
I want to change gears now, and again, I'm going to try to cover as much as we can today. School safety. Since the shooting in Parkland, Florida earlier this year, that incident seemed to energize not just educators. Educators have been concerned about this for a long time, but even non-educators, and by that I mean politicians, to make schools safer from intruders, would-be shooters. Dr. Whitham, let me start with you. And obviously, I wouldn't even ask you what specifically the district has done, because you don't want anyone knowing exactly what that is. But overall, generally, what has the district done? What are schools doing? What are they thinking about to try to make schools safer?
Well, back in June, the governor signed Act 44, which does require some consistent evaluation and maintenance of security measures across the state, which is a great first step. In the Cumberland Valley School District, we're looking at a three-pronged approach. First, there's obviously physical safety, and we went out and Worked with a firm to come and do a vulnerability assessment of all of our buildings, including our new building that's open up. And we're already following through on some of the recommendations that, they've made. Second, we are really realigning responsibilities within the school district, and we have separated transportation from security, which traditionally in school districts have kind of been bundled together, to really create a standalone, separate public safety
position. Explain that a little bit.
Well, in the we're dealing with obviously kids going in and out of our buildings,
right?
And from 8 o'clock in the morning until 3 o'clock in the afternoons, it's easier to secure buildings. From 3 o'clock in the afternoon until 11 o'clock at night, schools in central Pennsylvania are used heavy by the community, all kinds of things. So people are going in and out, during those times as well. And then we have football games and sporting events and people who are using our field, soccer associations that are coming in with their teams and running tournaments. And we could have upward to, 10, 12,000 people accessing spaces across the district in those situations simultaneously. So, we really need to look for and have someone who is dedicated to coordinating our safety efforts, not only those, physical barriers and locks, but also educating our faculty and staff in preparedness procedures, in safety drills, in making sure that all of our communication lines are in place. One of the things that we, that we did recently when we got the new building was certainly to walk through with first responders and make sure their radios, the county radios, were working, in every aspect of the building. Mm-hmm. By 9 o'clock every morning on all of Cumberland Valley campuses, we have well over 10,000 students, faculty, staff coming in, as well as visitors and outside agencies coming in. We are as big as the borough of Camp Hill and the borough of Dillsburg combined. Our high school is as big as some school districts. So that's why we really needed to take that position and hire someone who is a security expert to really work with us and work with our spaces on a daily basis. We're also in the process of establishing a tip line, hear something, see something, say something. And that is also important for us to keep ahead of it. And the last thing I'll mention, which is I think if you asked any administrator, particularly those in middle and high school right now, one of the most vexing safety issues, it's social media. There are things that occur on social media. I mean, literally just, they're not true, but yet they are tweeted and retweeted, and they become issues, perceptions that are real and fearful in people's minds. They literally cause health and anxiety issues among parents, among students. And in some cases, and we take every single one of those situations. We never assume that it's a falsehood, or we never assume that there's no truth to it. We assume that it is true, and then we work back to prove that it isn't. But in the meantime, in doing that, it creates a tremendous amount of anxiety. It disrupts our educational day, and it takes away from the productivity of parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles who are reading these tweets on social media or looking at Facebook and, are having their day disrupted because they're not sure whether this stuff is really happening or if it's true or not true.
John, obviously we had you on the program a few months ago, right after the Parkland shooting, talking about this. This obviously is one of the major concerns about in Pennsylvania school districts.
When we did our first State of Education survey, this was probably 6 months ago, and it came up with budgets as number one. Now, since then, we even just had a survey on what are the priorities for the association, and security is number one now. So, this is at the forefront of everybody out there in the education world. I'd say to Supers, and Fred's right here a little bit on the social media side, I think they probably dread the weekend because that's probably when a lot of social media stuff goes on. And every Monday, I bet you wake up and you say, what do I have to do with social media? There's so many challenges out there. Social media, not only, and then you add the lockdowns and all the kind of drills we have to do, for security, that schools focus on that, But we're trying to focus on it in a more holistic way. We're learning from other schools. There's a lot of forums now that we've been connecting schools with each other to learn about best practices. This is a huge focus and will never, I don't think it will ever go away. School security, I think I'll be talking about it for the rest of my life, because this is probably, since last year, the hottest topic, but I don't see it going away. We're going to be focusing on it.
Ron Cal, what works?
Well, I'm not the one to answer the question about what works. That's best determined by those who are on the ground, superintendents and principals. I think we ought to be talking to teachers, parents, certainly school board folks. There is a commission, a statewide commission, and I'm not sure if John or Fred are part of it, but there's a statewide commission that is at work. I think their report has been postponed just a couple of days, but I think sometime in the next 2-3 weeks we'll see a report that probably will have some other recommendations. The legislature did one very positive thing as part of this past budget, and that was to create a special pot of money. It amounts to about $60 million that will be available to schools and other entities for financial support for some safety-related initiatives. One of the problems with that pot of money is that it, at this point, is just a one-time pot of money. And so a superintendent or a school board that's considering how they might use this pot of money is going to be reluctant to make some kind of a long-term commitment, for instance, for salaries or anything that would be recurring when they're not sure the source of the money will be recurring. But that was an important initiative provided by the governor and the legislature as part of this year's budget.
You know, many parents, obviously, and educators are concerned about an intruder, someone coming into the building. But there are many others out there, and social media ties into this, who are very worried, have concerns about the day-to-day safety of their children from other students. Bullying, for example. Mike is in Harrisburg on the phone right now, and Mike, I understand that the violence in schools is one of the reasons, one of the main concerns for you.
Well, years ago, my kids are out of school now, but years ago, I had to put my kids in private school because basically the schools weren't safe. Okay? That's just what it was then. And what gets me now is I hear this stuff about property tax, and it, but we can't do that because, you know what, put an end to the property tax and you'll figure the money out. For instance, one suggestion, there should be no football anywhere, any public school right now, knowing what we know about head injuries. It's, I think, unbelievable risk for liability. That ought to go away. That'll save a little money.
All right. Thank you very much for your call. The point he brings up, first of all, you talk about politically unpopular, but Fred Witham, your team plays Bishop McDevitt tonight, right?
Big game.
One of the big games of the year. But this has been a suggestion for maybe not just football, but the point he brings up with what we know about head injuries is extracurriculars. That schools, you hear the criticism. I know you all have heard it. That you probably hear it on a daily basis, that if school districts were more efficient, spent more wisely, looked at extracurriculars, eliminated some of them, and we won't even get into merging school districts, but all those things, that there would not be the budgeting pressures that you face now.
Right. And I think it's easy to pick at different programs and say, look at this, look at that. But, fundamentally, we are running our schools on an 18th century agrarian calendar. We're using a 19th century industrial model. We're using 20th century technology, and we want 21st century results. We can't, across the Commonwealth, decide whether or not we should start school before or after the holiday weekend. I really do think that it is fundamental for us to examine what 21st century schools do, not throw the baby out with the bathwater, because there are some amazing things with the calendars that we have and the models that we use and the delivery methods that we employ, but there are some things that are outdated, inefficient, and as near and dear as some of those things are to our hearts, like summer vacation, we may need to begin to look at changing some of those models, some of those things that are within those models that are inefficient. And we see, honestly, our kids doing the way, leading the way in that. We started a program 3 years ago offering classes in the summer, and it was due to our, in part due to our growing enrollment. And we're offering juniors and seniors classes. And they're in a blended format, so they're partly delivered online and they're partly delivered face-to-face. And people, you know, first thought, well, you know, students don't want to come to school. It's the summer. That's summer school. And lo and behold, you know, the first year we had a little under 100 students. The second year we had over 200 students. And this year we had over 300 students attend the schools. So now they're advancing through the curriculum. They're choosing to graduate early and go to college. They're going off into the military. They're advancing their studies for specific ends to get credits from community colleges or certifications. And that's allowing us to really revision how we are doing things. Plus, in a growing high school, we graduated this June 640 seniors on a Saturday morning. And on Monday, we rolled up almost 760 freshmen because disproportionately the kids who have been moving into CV have been coming in at the elementary level. By using our buildings more than 183 days out of the year, by supporting our staff and using them in the summer for the things that they are best at doing, teaching, and particularly since we've already paid their benefits for the entire year, we're just adding on to their salary for teaching a course. We are gaining capacity in our buildings. We're leveraging the investment that we made in our educators' benefits, and we're asking the best of those teachers to do what they do well with kids in the summer. And it advances them through the curriculum and provides opportunities that are new.
See, let me just interrupt for a second, because we have 500 school districts in the state. There are many people who feel that's too many. We have more than 2,400 municipalities in the state. There are many people who feel that is too many. We are a state that is slow to change. What you just described as, you know, we're following a model that was developed in the 19th century. This state is slow to change. Let me just also add that, right, and our caller Mike mentioned football, for example, but schools have cut back and on some extracurriculars, but at the same time on some programs. Arts, music seem to be the programs that are hit the hardest in some of these districts. So when you cut, some decisions would have to be made about what would be cut. I said about football, for example, there are towns in this state that is their pride and joy. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying that would be very, very difficult if you would pit neighbors, friends, families against each other deciding what would have to be cut.
You look at consolidations and you look at them economically and they make a whole lot of sense, and you look at the variety of courses that you could offer kids across the larger district and it would make so much more sense. And then it all comes unhinged by what the mascot's going to be and what the team colors are going to be. And, you know, is it going to be one, two, or three football teams? And how is that all going to work? You know, there is pride and there is purpose in local control. And I think it serves the unique needs of every single community well. There are ways in which districts can cross district lines and become more efficient without necessarily giving up what makes them special and what makes them unique.
I mean, we've had districts that have had to grow. I think of Central Bucks. There was Central Bucks at one time. Now there's Central Bucks. East, West, South, yes. Downingtown, another one that I understand is probably going to get a third school. So, all right, we're going to move on to some other topics here in just a moment. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We only have a few minutes left, but we're trying to cover as many education issues as we can. And we obviously won't get to near as many as exist out there, the challenges facing schools in this school year. Our guest today, John Callahan, Chief Advocacy Officer for the Pennsylvania School Boards Association, Ronald Cow, Executive Director of the Education Policy and Leadership Center, Dr. Frederick Witham, Superintendent of Cumberland Valley School District. We invited PSEA and Pennsylvania Association of Rural and Small Schools, but but they declined. 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. By the way, coming up on Monday, Smart Talk, we take another look at Lyme disease with Mary Beth Pfeiffer, author of the book Lyme, the First Epidemic of Climate Change. That is coming up on Monday's program. All right, here's one I'm going to ask just John Callahan. And John, I'll ask for kind of a quick answer if you can. As I'm researching today's program and I'm looking for trends in education, I probably saw more articles on this topic than any other. Now, this is not just restricted to Pennsylvania, and that is the starting times for schools. There was some research that was out a few years ago that said that especially high school age students needed more sleep. They needed eight and a half hours a night. They weren't getting it to perform in school. Actually see that there are some Pennsylvania schools that are starting a little bit later. What's the trend?
The trend across the nation is this has been a hot topic, and there is a difference between younger kids and high school kids start time-wise scientifically and some of the studies that are out there. So right now in Pennsylvania, there's been a few school districts that are kind of adjusting time, and even in the legislature, there's a study that the House of Representatives is proposing to study what to do and what are some of the best recommendations. There's no one solution right now. This topic has been around for a few years, but I'd like to say it's just starting to kind of be enacted upon by school districts.
All right. Something else that is going on right now, and Ron had mentioned earlier when he was talking about budgets and that we would start school in April. One of the things that I've noticed over the last few years, especially when we've had late budgets coming from the legislature, is that school districts often are left up in the air, not knowing what's going to happen, not knowing how much money they're going to get. The year in which we went 9 months without a budget, there were some districts that were talking about having to close because of not knowing how much funding or running out of money. Something else that is being considered right now, I believe it's House Bill, Senate Bill 1095, graduation requirements. It's in the House right now. Students returning to high school who will not know what their graduation requirements are until this is resolved once and for all. John Callahan, what is it?
I'd say, since 2017 is when the legislature really said we're going to have graduation requirements, and then they realized, hey, this isn't really working out. We're starting to see all the bad results of high-stakes exams. So then they pulled back from it, and they keep on postponing to the point, now 2021 is when graduation requirements are supposed to happen. So we're working on a bill, Senate Bill 1095, that really would provide not just test-oriented graduation requirements, but also kind of career-oriented test requirements and multiple options for kids to actually graduate and solve this issue. Because it's been like a yo-yo for kids and school districts. We have graduation requirements. We don't have graduation requirements. You should do something with the curriculum. You shouldn't do something with the curriculum. And so this is finally getting down to the basis of here they are. Here's what you have to do. Let's settle it once and for all so that freshmen and sophomores and everybody knows here's what the requirements look like. Let's provide some consistency.
Rod, if I could just
go ahead, Rod.
This is evidence of an underlying debate about accountability, and everybody's for more accountability. The legislature has been best at holding students accountable, but everybody's for more accountability, but uncertain about what that should look like. And particularly, lawmakers get uncomfortable when you deal with the consequences of accountability. Like telling a student you may not graduate because you didn't do well on a state test. So this legislation that John just described is very, very important, but it is a manifestation of this larger debate about accountability, what it should look like, who should be held accountable, and what are the consequences related to accountability in this public school system.
Let's take a phone call from Barbara in East Berlin. Barbara, you're on the air.
Hello. I wanted to go back and talk for a minute about consolidation. I lived, you know, our school lived through two consolidations 2 years apart. And it was probably an uproar for the parents. It was probably an uproar for the teachers. But for the students, it was incredibly enjoyable to meet and greet new people and to have new activities. And like I said, like they said before, have new courses to choose from, those kinds of things. And I know for the past 30 years, our legislator has advocated for consolidation across school districts. I think it's shown to be the right thing to do monetarily. And I would like to see that argument picked up again.
All right. Thank you very much for your call. Years ago, former Governor Ed Rendell made this proposal in a budget address. He said that he could envision a day where there would be 100 school districts. You hear people talking about Pennsylvania following the Maryland model of doing it on a county-by-county basis. Again, the state is very slow to want and really kind of resistant to change like that. Whole new program there that we can discuss. Steve from Minersville called in and says eliminating standardized testing could save a lot of money. Standardized tests are not very popular. They may be as popular as property taxes, maybe a little more so. But at the same time, there aren't a lot of people, teachers included, that like standardized tests. But when Ron was talking about accountability, it is one of the few ways that you do find out what students have learned what level, but we've gotten away from it a little bit. Dr. Witham, where are we with standardized tests, I mean, compared to just a few years ago?
You know, there's nothing wrong with accountability. I think that our students and our faculty, our administrators, our superintendents need to be accountable for what our students are learning. And that is one measure by which you can measure, you know, how productive, how successful we are being. But it is only one measure. And I think we need to begin to look at multiple measures of student success. I think one of the tying back, because so many of these things are interrelated to property taxes, you know, people don't like taxes, period, but they are willing to be more accepting of them when there's a great return on investment. And I think one of the things that we really need to look at is, you know, what is it that we want our students to be able to do when they leave high school? And a high school diploma nowadays is really just you've met the minimum requirements of the state in order to receive this certificate. Starting this school year, CV is offering on top of the diploma, and this is a totally in-house program, endorsements in the forms of certificates that not only indicate that the student has met the minimum academic requirements to receive a high school diploma, but they are ready for the workforce, or they are ready for a career and post-secondary studies, or they are ready for advanced post-secondary studies.
That's the bottom line.
You know, success of our children, aligning our public school programs with opportunities in the economy are vital. In the Cumberland Valley School District, we have 20% free and reduced lunch. In Cumberland County, we have 3% unemployment. We have business and industry saying to us every single day, we have great paying jobs. These pay family sustaining wages that we can't fill because we don't have the properly trained employees to move into them.
We're going to, and I want to interrupt for just a second, so we only have a minute or so left, in a week or so, not that this is going to solve all the problems, but want to draw attention to just what you're describing, because we've heard many times, there are many Pennsylvania employers out there say they just can't find the skilled workers because so many students are looking for a four-year education, a four-year degree, not going into the skills. Let me just, for in our last 90 seconds, John, let me just something else that we're hearing. I don't know whether this is a Pennsylvania problem or not, a teacher shortage.
Yeah, I mean, we have a teacher shortage in Pennsylvania. We're having less and less graduates from the higher eds that are kind of in the teaching space. So you kind of have the pressure from that end. That's
there,
happening.
You have fewer college students majoring in education.
Exactly. And then you also have the fact that, I mean, we really didn't talk about it, but we have a lot of our school districts living in poverty. So the amount that they can actually get to pay for these students, for these students coming out of college that are now teachers, is a lot less.
There seems to be a difference of opinion I heard from PSEA that they said there is not a teacher shortage right now. There will be one coming when, you know, a lot of teachers who are in the classroom now, when they retire, and that there is probably a shortage in a lot of rural districts and a lot of inner city schools. So, you know, maybe a difference of opinion.
I don't disagree with that. I think it's a combination.
Mm-hmm. And some subjects.
Yes. Like what, Ron? What subjects?
Chemistry. I'm told special education, for instance, foreign languages, certain math or science courses.
Huh. Yeah. So these are so many topics, and I'm glad that we got to as many as we did. But I want to thank you, gentlemen, for being with us today. Dr. Frederick Witham, Superintendent Cumberland Valley School District. Ronald Cow, Executive Director, Education Policy and Leadership Center. John Callahan, Chief Advocacy Officer for the Pennsylvania School Boards Association. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And let's hope that everyone has a great school year. Most districts will be in class by next week. So I know parents are looking forward to that.